Welcome to MGO Podcast 3.6, I believe. I'm Ace Ambender hosting this thing this week because Brian is in Chicago. This week we discuss the Northwestern game, obviously, Denard's throwing, the offensive line's distressing inability to really run block, the defense's kind of two-faced first half versus second half performance, our infuriating inability to adjust to the option early on, and Will Campbell crushing people. So enjoy. All right, we welcome in Jamie Mack from JustCoverBlog.com. How's it going, Jamie?
I'm doing well, Ace. I'm living in a world where I can't really pick a Big Ten game to save my life, but I'm winning on odd teams week in and week out, like Washington and Washington State, and I'm actually playing on Les Miles' team and winning. So all things being equal, it's pretty good.
Yeah, no, I'd be staying away from Big Ten betting to save my life at this point, I think, or at least my sanity.
Some of these teams are just so unreliable.
Yeah. The one not unreliable team, if we can just dive right into next week's slate, is Wisconsin, who is playing your alma mater, Indiana. And
yes.
I think we could probably cover this game relatively quickly. Wisconsin is going to win by a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, they should. They should put a prop on the board. Will they? Will they outscore themselves from last year in this game? Then they put on eight. They put 80 on.
Yeah.
On the Hoosiers, and that should be the. That should be what they should put on there in lieu of the point spread. You know.
Yeah, that point spread's got to be. 30. Like it's. I don't know if you can go high enough with that spread.
Yeah, I would be stunned if the point spread was. Was less than 30. You don't see it too often in big time conference games, or I'm sorry, in the BCS conferences that you'll have a spread that high in league games. Although we saw it yesterday with Alabama and Vanderbilt, I think that spread was 30 or 31. But you know, Vanderbilt actually brings in a pretty good defense. Indiana doesn't bring in anything, so this spread should be into the 30s. And you know, it's going to be ugly. I remember once I was out in a sports book out in Vegas. Right as the Antoine Randall L years were beginning to blossom, and we all thought Indiana football might do something, and they were playing Ron Dayne and the Badgers, and I think we were getting like two touchdowns with the Hoosiers, and the over-under was 57.5, and all of us took Indiana and the over-under, and sure enough, Wisconsin actually covered the overall by themselves, winning like 58-0, just over it. So we split our bets, but you know, I think the game's going to be a lot like that too.
Yeah, it certainly seems that.
Yeah,
Indiana is just not going to be able to hold up against Wisconsin whatsoever. In a game that will be, I don't know. I don't know if I want to say more interesting. It'll be closer. Penn State, who just came off of a horrifically ugly win over Iowa, plays Purdue, who beat Minnesota, which I think any high school team could probably do at this point. So thoughts on that game?
Well, Penn State's offense could struggle enough to keep Purdue in range, but I mean, I think it's going to be a blowout as well. I think it's time to really put Penn State's defense into the discussion of, you know, one of the Big Ten's top units, you know, all around. Whether, you know, when you throw all the offenses and special teams and defenses and positionals. You know, in there. I mean, they looked lights out yesterday, really throttling that Iowa passing attack. Sometimes it looked like they had 14 guys out there.
Yeah,
real impressive effort, I thought. And Purdue's just not going to get anything going. And it's going to be one of those 20-0 routes, I think, because I don't really feel like Penn State's still got a lot of offense. But once they get a few scores ahead against Purdue, the Boilers just aren't going to be able to come back on that defense and. Then they'll just strangle the rest of the game with Silas Red.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And especially at Penn State, I'm surprised to be saying this, but I think they got to just stick with McGloin at this point because Bolden really does not seem to have it, at least not yet. And they were able to generate some points with McGloin, and I was surprised that they kept rotating Bolden in, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe Joe Pa is getting flashbacks of Michael Robinson, and he thinks he's got that kind of ability on the field. You know, they never really knew when or how to play him, but you know, Bolden doesn't have that kind of game either. So I don't know why they seem persistent on that. It seems to be obvious every time I watch them watched them play, they've got some good wide receivers, and McGoin can at least make it happen with them on occasion.
Yeah, if nothing else, you can chuck it up to like Derek Moy and let him make a play. But it's Bolden isn't even capable of doing that, it seems.
Yeah, yeah. Silas Red really broke out yesterday, I thought, too. I think he's got a world of talent. So, you know, Penn State might be on the uptick. I think they've got a world to go before they can compete with Wisconsin. When they still have to play Illinois and they got to go to Columbus, they might be in a position at least going into that Wisconsin game to do some damage. But I still think they're worlds away from taking that division. I still don't know if they're better than Illinois, but they're clearly the third best team in that division, for whatever that's worth. And I thought they were going to lose yesterday, and they won. So suddenly, I'm kind of looking at them with a much better perspective. And I can't wait for that Illinois Penn State game. I think we're going to have two teams with some all stars on defense in that contest. That'll be a fun one to watch in a few weeks.
Or like a 7-3 game, but we'll see.
I like some of those 7-3 games.
Yeah,
man. As long as the defense is earning those 7-3 games. You know, I mean, if it's, you know, unless it's Ohio State, Michigan State, those 10-7 Herp Derp games really aren't that entertaining. But you know, when it's your two hated rivals doing it, that takes it up to a notch. But I think that could be a game, though, where you get, you know, so many great quality defensive plays, you just can't wait to watch the defenses play. So
absolutely. No, I certainly came away from the Penn State Iowa game yesterday a little less worried about playing Iowa, and certainly a little happier about not having to play Penn State, because just having to go up against that defense would be. I still think Michigan would win a matchup between those two teams, but I'm a lot less confident about it this week than I would have been last week.
Yeah, me too.
So speaking of that Iowa Penn State game, we move over to Iowa versus Northwestern. I have no idea what to think about this game. Northwestern is blowing games in the second half with regularity at this point, and Iowa just got completely shut down by Penn State. So I really don't know what to think about this one.
Well, I think one of the things that I think should be noted from yesterday's results was again, Iowa's defense. I mean, 400 yards to a Penn State offense that had been struggling against everybody, you know, from Temple to Eastern, to obviously Alabama, but
yeah, that's a given.
That we've been talking about this on some of the past podcasts, that this defense is just not up to Iowa standards, and they're going to have problems all year stopping people. I think that they will get their passing game back on track, though, for sure against Northwestern. I think we can all agree to that. After seeing Northwestern the last couple weeks, I mean, they really haven't been able to cover anybody. And Iowa's passing attack is pretty legit, which is, you know, getting back to Penn State real quickly, one reason why I think we're all more interested in Penn State, because they shut that down. So I think we're going to see a real high-scoring game. I know the last few Northwestern-Iowa games have been more defensive-driven, but I think this year we're going to get a more offensive-driven game. I think the quarterbacks are going to probably combine for 700 total yards. The loser could actually score more than 30 points in this game. But what I'm probably going to do is wait for the point spread to come out. I think Northwestern's going to be catching some points. I'm going to take Northwestern and whatever points the book will give me, and I'm going to roll with that as a play. There's great series history here for Northwestern. They've won 3 in a row on this field, and 5 out of 6 overall against Iowa. They really treat the Hawkeyes as kind of a rivalry game, and it seems to work for them. Now, who knows if they're going to be, you know, in their best mental state of mind. I mean, they could be mentally shot. I mean, Fitzgerald almost blew it last night, didn't he? I mean,
he lost it.
Yeah, and that's a really uncharacteristic of him, and I felt that was as much that play as it has been just also the last 3 outcomes of their games. You know, I think it just all, you know, added up, so who knows where they're at in this game. But I'll just take Northwestern and the points. Neither of these teams can be trusted as a favorite with the defense they've got, so I'm going to take the underdog in this matchup. And then besides, the underdog in Northwestern games has been covering at a 2 out of every 3 clip in the Fitzgerald era. Obviously, Michigan covered as a favorite yesterday, so you got some percentages there. So
Yeah, if anything,
you know, of all the games we're talking about, I know one thing that I'll do next week, and I will be taking Northwestern in the points.
Yeah, if anything, I'd be trusting Dan Persa over James Vandenberg at this point. If it's going to be an offensive game, I would definitely put my money on Persa instead of Vandenberg to be able to outscore the other team.
Yeah, you know, and I do like Vandenberg. I mean, I think he's a good quarterback. But as we saw yesterday, you know, he got baited into a lot of mistakes. And Northwestern's not going to stop you cold, but I think we could probably agree based on what we saw a little bit yesterday and even how they played Illinois that, you know, they've got the ability in that back seven to sort of, you know, get you into a mistake or two. And, you know, I could see Peters again getting another interception. You know, he had a big interception against us. He had a big interception against Illinois. I could see him getting that big interception where nobody on Iowa's defense has really stepped up at all to make a big play. And so, yeah, and I think we could also put the health issue maybe to rest because I didn't think he didn't have to leave the game really yesterday because of his health. I mean, I think the Cats could get rolling in this game. I wouldn't be surprised if they walk out with a win. I think they're a better team than Iowa at this point.
Yeah, I would agree. Moving on to another pretty interesting matchup, Ohio State, who showed some shocking offensive competence until Braxton Miller went down last night against Illinois, who kind of blew the doors off of Indiana after struggling a little bit early. I think I like Illinois in this one, but especially depending on the health of Braxton Miller, which is a completely bizarre thing to say after the first few weeks of the season, but I think I like Illinois, but I'm not sure anymore after what Ohio State showed before Miller went down last night.
Well, I like Illinois. You know, either way, the strength of that opinion is going to obviously grow or diminish based on Miller's health. That game, excuse me, with Nebraska was really interesting. It reminded me a lot of the 2008. Michigan Penn State game where Michigan sort of against all odds, you know, staked out to an early lead, and then as they started to fade just a little bit in the second half, they had no shot at preventing a total collapse because Threat went out. They had to go with Sheridan, and suddenly, you know, the offense was back to going in reverse because the second Bowserman went in that game, Ohio State wasn't getting first downs, you know, and it was just a matter of could Nebraska take advantage of it, and would they have enough time to take advantage of it, because there was only a quarter and a half left, and they were down by two touchdowns at that time. I think that they have a shot with Miller because, you know, they had a game plan yesterday that played to his strengths. They ran out of the pistol. They had some design quarterback draws, real quick passing attempts, and some of their more effective passing attempts involved duplicity, if you will. You know, the touchdown they had to their tight end Stonebrunner, you know, they sort of, you know, leaked him out into the flat and dumped it to him, and he ran. It was a very Northwestern-y play, the type of play they run with Dunsmore, you know.
Yeah.
So that's a for crafty for Ohio State, but, you know, again, you know, Ohio State, they generally don't need crafty to create offense, and they do this year. But when Miller's out, they can't, you know, there's no fooling anybody. I mean, it's just the defense's ears are pinned back. They're coming at you, and they're not scoring. If Bosman has to play, they're not scoring points against Illinois. They're not going to get double digits against this Illinois defense. Way too much pressure for Bowserman. But I think even if Miller does play, I think they're going to have struggle because he's going to still be limited on the ankle. Probably it looked pretty bad, you know, the injury. I mean, he was actually in tears at one point because of the injury. So I mean, I don't think this is something that's just going to go away. And but Illinois' defense is better than Nebraska's. Their front seven is way more suffocating, and I think you're going to see a little bit more of the Michigan State type of pressure they had going against them, where Miller was sort of running around, kind of confused and scared. Whitney Marcellus has been huge for the Illini. I don't know if you've been following him. He's got 8.5 sacks already.
Yeah, no, he's been quite impressive.
Yeah, and I just think that, and he's not alone. I mean, you know, they get Jonathan Brown back from suspension. They've got a great set of linebackers. Their other end, Buchanan, has been getting to the quarterback. as good as the game plan was last night against Nebraska, you do also have to just ding Nebraska up a little bit. We've been saying it all year on the podcast. Their defense, there's just something not right about it. And now we've seen Fresno, Washington, Wisconsin, and Ohio State, four teams of varying degree across the college football spectrum, lining up and running it at them. So I think that to some extent you can look at Ohio State's success last night and mark it over who they're playing, and it's going to be a harder foe next week, I believe, for against Illinois. And I think Illinois is going to win this game by let's assume that Miller does play. I still think Illinois wins this game by a touchdown, but they win it in a blowout, Miami of Florida style, if Bousman has to go the whole way.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. As long as Illinois can avoid, they had a couple early mistakes where I thought Indiana could have taken advantage of it and made it a bit of a game yesterday. Yeah. And Indiana just, I know they had a fumble down on the three that they couldn't turn into a touchdown, and that seemed to be when the game really turned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they limited them to two field goals in two quick change opportunities, and then Marcellus just, you know, like he's been doing every game, made a play, forced a fumble, his fourth fumble of the year, and one of his teammates picked it up for a touchdown, and then the route was on. They gave up an opening touchdown on a kickoff, so even though Indiana had a 10-0 lead in the early going, it wasn't really a case of anything that like Illinois was doing wrong other than just one bad play and a turnover. So I think they showed pretty well, even though their competition was pretty weak. Now, you've seen Illinois play quite a bit because I know you watched the Northwestern game on tape for
the quad F. Yeah.
Yes. What's the fourth one?
FIFO film.
The film. Oh yeah. Gosh. And I said film at the front end of the sentence. I didn't think to put it at the back end. But so, what do you think of Illinois? Because I'm liking this. I'm liking this team a lot. I'm really excited to see them play. I feel like they're going to just tear apart this Ohio State offense, as even with the newfound success they had last night. And I can't wait to see Taylor Lewan from Michigan go up against this
Marcellus
kid. Rather,
yeah,
a couple weeks.
Illinois. I mean, if they can limit mistakes, that team, I think, actually scares me in terms of who Michigan has to play, possibly more than any other team left on the schedule, because we'll get into Michigan State next, but their offensive line is obviously a major issue. Ohio State, even with yesterday, doesn't really have an offense, and yeah. Nebraska's defense does not look very good, and Iowa just lost 16-3 to Penn State, so or 13-3. Illinois, I would say, is definitely the toughest team left on the schedule, and you know, Shieldhouse does a pretty good job of managing that offense. They've got a great running game, obviously, and AJ Jenkins is just—he's really fantastic at receiver and all over the. I mean, he's pretty much their entire passing game, but it works for them. He just breaks a lot of big plays, and I don't know if Michigan has played against a receiver. I mean, they played against Michael Floyd, who's a better receiver, but I don't think we've seen somebody with the kind of speed and playmaking combination that Jenkins has.
Yeah, and I think that if the game on Saturday bogs down, into a defensive slugfest and points are at a premium, I mean, you know, between Ohio State and Illinois, you know, the Jenkins kid is the difference between those two teams if the offenses on both sides are struggling. The thing with Illinois, when you look at the Big Ten, you can pick out every team, I believe, and find a fatal flaw, or at least still have a doubt on some positional unit that's going to come back and haunt them, you know, as the competition gets harder. But Wisconsin doesn't have that, and I'm not so sure Illinois has that either. There's not, you know, the line appears to be blocking well. Obviously, their defense is looking lights out. Yeah, the question mark is, you know, is Shell Hayes, will he make mistakes as quarterback? But, you know, they only throw the ball like 15 times a game, so they limit the opportunities for him to make mistakes. Yeah, they're looking pretty tough to beat.
Yeah, it seems like their game's mostly turned on like fumbles, and that's not something that you can really point at and go, well, that's going to continue.
Yeah.
So they seem to be the clear-cut number two team of the Big Ten under Wisconsin, and then I think it's Michigan after that, which is kind of crazy to say at this point. But
Illinois has now won seven games in a row, and dating back to the start of last year, they're 14-5 against the spread. So they've got it going. They've got it going, and bowl eligibility, I think their sights are a little bit higher than that, but it's also worth pointing out this is a program that, generally speaking, does not make it to bowl games in consecutive years too often over the course of their history. So we're at a notable time for Illinois football, and they've got some interesting games coming up with Ohio State, obviously, next week, but they also go to Penn State, and then they host Michigan and Wisconsin in back-to-back weeks in November. As long as they can take care of the Buckeyes and at least not just split in that Penn State Michigan back-to-backer, they're going to be hosting Wisconsin with a chance to win that division on a tiebreak. So interesting storyline, a fun storyline, and an otherwise down year for the Big Ten. It's an exciting storyline if you look at it, you know, from a Big Ten standpoint, because there's some exciting playmakers on defense, the Jenkins kid on offense, plus the whole style that they run on their offense. It's definitely a fun team.
Yeah, they're definitely enjoyable to watch. I do like watching them play. Mm-hmm. All right, I guess moving on to the feature game and the game I know all the podcast listeners want to hear us talk about, Michigan State this week. I was more confident last week, once again, but Michigan State having the bye and Michigan coming off probably their, I guess outside of Notre Dame, least impressive performance of the season, it should be close, I would think.
Well, I don't think I've ever really felt confident about this game. You know, even as the whole Big Ten perspective has shifted the first half of the season, you know, the one thing that never shifted in my mind was the thought that I didn't think Michigan was going to be able to go up to East Lansing and win the game. Even in the wake of the Notre Dame game, I still wasn't ready to move my dial on that. So I think Michigan's chances against everybody else in the league has improved significantly. I just don't feel like they're going to be able to go up there and win that game. The week off, I think, is going to be the week off is huge. I really do feel that, because we saw some improvements out of Michigan State on that offensive line, and the coaches are just going to make enough refinements again to just make it, you know, a little bit better. And they've struggled so much, Michigan State, out of their weird, quirky-looking bunch formations. They've really struggled so much, and Michigan's done so well in their third and short situations. I wonder if Michigan State's going to fool them with the tight end time and time again. That would be a fear of mine in the coaching chess match, because Michigan State has not been good in those short situations where Michigan has been lights out in them. And you wonder if, with a week off to prepare and scout, if Michigan State's going to be able to get the best of Michigan there. And I worry about the interior of our offensive line going up against that defensive line. Not as much David Mulk, but I feel like we're not that strong right now at guard on either side.
Yeah, and Jarrell Worthy.
I worry about Worthy and that other, the nose tackle, the Rashad White kid. I worry about those matchups a lot.
Absolutely. I think, I don't know, flipping back over to when State has the ball, the matchup that definitely concerns me is Keyshawn Martin, considering how much Northwestern had success, and Brian and I talked about this earlier, throwing the bubble screen, although Michigan did eventually make an adjustment in the second half. But in the first half, Northwestern was hitting that often. And Keyshawn Martin, I think, is a little more explosive athletically than any of the receivers on Northwestern's roster. So B.J. Cunningham is, you know, he might be the best receiver in the Big Ten right now. And so Michigan is going to have their hands full with him. And having the single cover Keyshawn Martin certainly frightens me. I'm worried about that matchup.
And they haven't really been using him a lot this year, but that's, again, something that the team could correct itself on, you know, with that extra week of preparation, you know, as you know. And also with Martin, he's an excellent return man, and you know, we're still sort of shaky in the return coverage, I feel.
Definitely, and with punt coverage too. The play where, and Brian and I didn't talk about this, but the Michigan's one punt, and both gunners got right down there for the tackle, and both completely whiffed. And Northwestern ended up getting the ball around Michigan's 40, and that was. We're both on the we need to switch to a spread punt bandwagon. Just because it's way more effective in limiting returns. But I'm worried that that the Michigan State game could shift both in the return game and if it has to come down to turnovers. Cousins certainly has shown the ability to have some really terrible brain fart moments. But if I had to guess who would throw more interceptions, Denard Robinson or Kirk Cousins, I'd say Denard. And if the game comes down to that, that's definitely advantage State.
How do you think the matchup's going to go on the other end when Michigan's on DC? I'm intrigued to see this because, you know, I still don't know how great Michigan State's line is, and I still don't know where I stand on Michigan's defense as a full unit. Like, I'd like to think that maybe Michigan State, or Michigan rather, could slow down Michigan State a little bit better than they did last year. And I think if they can, Michigan's going to be in the game in the end, but I just don't trust Michigan in this matchup right now.
Yeah, I mean, the two things I think about there are, first of all, obviously the matchup against Michigan State's offensive line. I think Mike Martin's going to have a field day against that interior line. He's going to be blowing things up, and I'm not sure if State is really going to be able to establish that much of a running game. It might not matter, but I don't know if they're going to be able to really pound the ball at Michigan that much, especially now that Michigan doesn't have to focus on a running quarterback at all. I think the biggest difference between the defense last year and the defense this year is that even when they're not playing that great, they are keeping plays in front of them. Besides the Notre Dame touchdown, the apparent game-winning touchdown late, there hasn't really been a play where an opponent has broken it open and just gotten by everybody. The safeties are doing a great job of keeping plays in front of them. So that's kind of the one thing I think could play into Michigan's favor as well. Michigan definitely, I mean, Denard Robinson is obviously always a home run threat. As long as Michigan can keep B.J. Cunningham from getting behind the defense, and when Keyshawn Martin catches the ball short, making sure that they at least limit him before he gets too far downfield, Cousins might be able to make a mistake, and I just don't know if Michigan State has the horses up front to really be able to run on Michigan, which is another thing that I can't believe I'm saying after this offseason and everything heading into the year, but I don't think Michigan State is really going to be able to run on Michigan that much with that O-line, and then it's a matter of making sure they limit the big plays, which they've been able to do this year quite well. So I really don't know what to think about this game, because part of me thinks that with Michigan State not being able to run and hopefully Michigan being able to generate a pass rush when Cousins drops back to pass, that they'll be able to tee off on him a little bit and maybe force a turnover. And while Northwestern did a pretty solid job at slowing down Michigan's run game, still put up over 300 yards in the air and, generated over 500 yards of total offense. No one's really able to slow Michigan down except Michigan. So if I think in the end it comes down to does Denard Robinson correct, whatever was causing him to throw the ball directly to Northwestern defenders, which we've seen in the past, obviously he throws some terrible, terrible interceptions, but if he's able to limit that, I think Michigan wins. If he has a couple of back-breaking interceptions, especially down in the red zone, then I think Michigan State comes away with it. And, if the game comes down to whether or not Denard is throwing picks, it's a toss-up, I would say.
Yeah. The two things I thought about this game throughout the summer, and I don't even know how relevant either of these thoughts are anymore. It's just kind of been how bizarre the season has been. But the two thoughts were that despite the rout on the scoreboard last year, I actually thought Michigan played Michigan State better last year than they had the previous two seasons, at least on offense. You know, I mean, 2008, they really 2008 and 2009, they could barely cross the street against Michigan State offensively, save for a couple of strategic plays here and there that kept Michigan in the ball game.
Yeah.
But last year was different. Last year they were marching drives, they were sustaining drives. They just had red zone issues. They forced turnovers on Denard. But I was kind of like, okay, hey, listen, this offense at least finally moved on this defense. And that leads me to the second thought I always had about this game, is that I would switch defensive rosters with Michigan State, you know, in a heartbeat. And I think that it's less of a heartbeat now because I like enough what I see out of Michigan's defense where I feel like you know, with the players on the team, this could be something, you know, down the line. You know, but obviously in the summer, you know, you know there was a lot of, like, you know, everybody was still a myth in the summer. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
some people like Brandon Hoffman, for example, weren't even a myth.
Yeah, they were just off the radar.
Yeah. So, but now, you know, Michigan has kind of emerged a little bit defensively where you feel like they could kind of, you know, hold their own. And that alters the dynamic a little bit in this game. But I think it's going to be an interesting game from the standing standpoint. I mean, the division is kind of sort of on the line here. I mean, let's best case, Michigan wins this division. You know, they are more than likely looking at a home game with Nebraska to... For the championship.
Yeah.
If Michigan wins this game. Now, Michigan State, if they win this game, you know, they still have a little bit of work to do. They have to go to Nebraska, obviously, and they already have the one conference loss, but it puts them in a very good position as well. But, I mean, I think Michigan is the team that can really gain a lot in this divisional race if they go up there and somehow get a win. I mean, they would need to... they would need to collapse, because even if they lost in Iowa and in Illinois, they would probably be they'd still be playing the Nebraska game with a chance to give the Huskers no better than their second loss, and they'd own the tiebreak at that point. And Michigan State would have two losses with the tiebreaker. So I mean, it's an interesting game from that regard, and I'm just sort of hoping that the Wolverines are at least up for it for four quarters.
Yeah, and I mean, like I said, I really think it just comes down to turnovers. I know it's an easy kind of cliche thing to fall back on, but these teams just seems like their weaknesses almost cancel out, and it's going to be pretty evenly matched, and it just comes down to which team's playmakers hold onto the ball and can get some big plays out of this game, because it might be kind of tough for Michigan to break big plays on Michigan State in the run game, and you know, Michigan's done a fantastic job of holding down the big plays, but Michigan State, their whole receiving core is pretty solid, and Kirk Cousins, when he's on, can really throw the ball around. So that one, I certainly wouldn't want to bet on that game, because I could see it going. I could see Michigan State blowing Michigan out. I could see Michigan blowing that game open, and I could see it being a game that goes right down to the wire. And I really have no idea which one it's going to be, because it's, you know, for being six games into the season, it's really still tough to get a handle on this Michigan team. And I'd say the same thing about Michigan State. And I don't think the Ohio State game told us that much, and they haven't played anyone else really. So it's tough to get a handle on.
I don't think anybody thought in the summer that Michigan and Michigan State would be the second or third best teams in the Big Ten. But as we head into this matchup, that kind of almost sort of is the reality. And I think rightfully so, a lot of us, you know, that whether we analyze games to write blog posts or whether we're picking games or whatever, I think a lot of us are rightfully sort of like, okay, let's wait and see still.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of fortuitous that they're playing each other this week. But I mean, I think that's where we're at with the Big Ten. I mean, some of these other teams look so flawed, and Michigan and Michigan State, literally, you know, throw Illinois in the mix, you know, that's the top three after Wisconsin. And, you know, with all three of those teams, none of that was expected. So we're all sort of like, really? Is this all for real? Let's see. Well, what did you think about my comment there on the defensive rosters? I mean, obviously, I think a lot's changed in the last couple months.
As me
wanting to just blatantly switch defensive rosters, but I'm a big believer in what Michigan State's doing up there with their defensive roster. I know that some people aren't, and I don't understand why they aren't. I think they've got a heck of a defensive program going up there right now. Michigan's got to catch up. You know, that's the issue, and I think we've seen some signs that they are catching up, and mostly that's because of what Michigan's elevating, not because Michigan State's declining.
I would say. I mean, you can say all you want about Michigan's defense so far this year, but they haven't, you know, the two games in which they played a team that really had an offense, Notre Dame and Northwestern, the opposing team was still able to have a fair amount of success. Now, Northwestern, they ended up holding down actually pretty well, especially considering the 80-yard garbage drive at the end that made Northwestern look like they had a lot more yards than they really did in meaningful drives, but...
Garbage drive, by the way, all around, Ace, because it didn't even impact the 7-point line in Vegas, you know, at that point, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, just totally unentertaining, worthless garbage drive all around. And I'm glad the refs called a penalty or two along the way to extend it. That was great.
Yeah. So, I mean, to get back to your question, I would say, I want to trust this Michigan defense, but, I'm too aware of the talent level on it, and I think Michigan State has... just more talent on their defense right now and more experience. And Greg Madison has done an incredible job of coaching this defense up, but every game it seems like they have to make, you know, these big second half adjustments because they're getting gashed early. So I think if they have the talent of Michigan State starting out right away, they might not have to be put in that position where they're making all these changes on the fly because their guys aren't really prepared for whatever the opposing team is bringing. So I would have to still say it's close, but I would say I'd switch rosters with Michigan State. I think Jarrell Worthy probably pushes it over the top there.
He's a big boy.
But it's a lot closer than I would have said before the season when I would have done that, you know, like you said, in a heartbeat. I would have switched rosters with Michigan State on the defensive side of the ball.
And I think the exciting thing is that it's gotten closer because of some of the play we've seen out of Michigan. I think that's exciting, and I think Saturday is going to be a big test in that regard. You know, Madison could very well be the ace in the hole for Michigan in this game. You know, hey, at least he did make those halftime adjustments and turn those games around. You know, actually, I think some of the adjustments took place before halftime. You know, the Notre Dame didn't do much really in the second quarter, and then yesterday... You know, correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't that second quarter feel like 2010 the whole way, right?
Yeah, no, I would agree with you there.
And yet it was only a 10-7 outcome in that quarter for Northwestern. That was the first time that Michigan was outscored in the second quarter this year. Remember, that was an awful quarter for them last year. But it felt all the way like a second quarter from last year. And you know what? Those quarters were 21-7 against Michigan last year, not just 10-7.
Yeah. And
so even though it felt like the second quarter all the way last year, the end result really wasn't. And that enabled Michigan's adjustments at halftime, offensively and defensively, to be a lot more relevant than they were last year. And, you know, I also know that on the Michigan State side of the fence that there's been some hand-wringing with the new offensive coordinator and some of his game planning and some of his play calling. I didn't think it mattered any of the last couple of years who did the play calling. Kuko the Bird could have done the play calling against Gerg, and there's an advantage.
Yeah.
Now, that may have flipped here a little bit in this rivalry. So, you know, not just in this rivalry, but in any game Michigan plays, for God's sake. You know? I mean, so...
Yeah, so it's night and day from last year in terms of defensive adjustments and coaching in general. So it's going to be... I mean, if you had to... I know the lines haven't come out, but if you had to guess a line and say who you'd go with, I'd have a tough time picking this game. What are your thoughts in terms of that?
Well, as far as the point spread, in the heat of the summer, when the lines first came out and all that action was coming against Michigan, this line actually got up to Michigan State -7. Now, by the time most of the onlines put their lines up, which is probably a good month after the Golden Nugget out in Vegas put theirs up, it settled into 4, 4.5. But it's been down to 3 as the season's gotten on. I don't think it's going to be lower than that. I think Michigan State is still going to be favored here by 3 or 4 points. I'm sort of developing a Chicken Little reputation around the blog, you know, because you know I hyped up the whole first road game stuff, et cetera, et cetera. Well, I'll go another Chicken Little route as far as the spread with this game. Well, and we don't know because maybe Michigan State pops into the rankings this week. Because I mean, let's be honest. Wait, is Michigan State ranked right now?
That's a good question. I actually have no idea. And
I didn't think they were, but now that I'm yammering away, it's dawning on me that maybe they are ranked. Because if they're favored and they're not ranked, you know, I know that a lot of people that do this type of stuff for a living, they love playing the unranked team that's favored over the ranked opponent. And we saw that 2 years ago in East Lansing when the unranked Michigan State team was favored by 4 and covered against Michigan on the caper touchdown in overtime. So that's my Chicken Little gambling theory of the week is always be wary of the unranked team that's favored over the ranked team.
Yeah. Now I'd have to expect they might, I think they might have moved to the bottom of the rankings, and if they haven't, I feel like they might do it by default this week, but
I know. That's why I all of a sudden slowed my roll on this. We might need to pay an editor to get rid of this whole.
Yeah.
No, yeah, exactly. Because, like, I mean, seriously, hey, they made my blog poll ballot, and I know they made Brian's blog poll ballot. They ain't leaving either of ours. You know, they're not.
Yeah, I mean, doing nothing right now is.
There's not 25 better teams in the country than the Michigan State Spartans. So if they're not ranked, I don't know what people are looking at. Frankly, Notre Dame should be ranked too.
Yeah, I'm not sure there are 25 good teams in the country right now. It seems like it's a bizarre year. Yeah,
that's not what I said. You know, we debated this week about Michigan's ranking. Is it high or not? And I think Michigan's ranking is perfect because I think once you get past the first half dozen, you know, 6, 7, maybe 8 teams, there's just such a wide gap. You know, and
yeah,
why not?
Absolutely.
Let Michigan be the best of that wide gap. Hell, Michigan State's up there too, I think, as far as the better teams after that first tier. And it's not just a small tier, though. A small gap between those teams. I mean, you know, this is the biggest gap I can remember from, like, team 7-ish to the rest of the country. I mean, you know, I just think that...
Yeah, there's a huge rift. And in terms of the resume, Michigan is right up there with anyone after that top tier of teams. I'm not arguing that we should be the number 7 or 8 team in the country, but, you know, Michigan's probably going to end up being pretty close to that this week in the polls.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you saw Texas was ranked right near us in the polls, and you saw what they did to Oklahoma, and same thing with Nebraska and Wisconsin, right? Well, you know what? I think Wisconsin and Oklahoma would have done that to us, too.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yay, we're all the 11th or 12th team in the country. That's what you get, you know? I mean...
Yeah. It's a weird year, but it'll be an interesting game on Saturday. That's for sure. Well, Jamie, thanks a lot for coming on, and look forward to the game this weekend, and look forward to talking to you next week.
Cool. Thanks, Ace. Enjoy.
Yeah.
How'd that go?
I thought that was great. That was good. It's a little weird being in the studio by myself right now, but No, that was good, I thought.
All right, cool. Yeah, I've never done a podcast without Brian, so it was sort of, I think it worked well.
Yeah, no, I thought it was good. I'm glad you took the lead on a lot of this. I haven't been able to watch as much Big Ten as I really want to.
That's where I was. I wasn't sure if I was doing the right thing or not. There was at least 3 or 4 times where I was like, I think I've rambled more often than I usually do. What's going on?
No, I was glad. I was glad for that. So I thought it was good.
It's an interesting year for the conference, and you know, last year I didn't have a feel for the conference, and I really don't have a feel for it this year as far as picking games. And I always. This is a hard spot for me to pick games and not knowing, you know, any of the lines.
Yeah.
But I'm reasonably confident that I'm going to take Northwestern or whatever points, and I'm pretty reasonably confident that I'm going to somehow find a way to take Illinois. I'm sort of hoping that, but then that whole Bowserman thing, that might make that line so big. But I laid the 11 points last night with Nebraska, and I would do it again.
Yeah.
And they almost covered. Even as crappy as they played, they still almost covered that line.
Yeah, I'm still, and now I don't know what to think about Ohio State or Nebraska. Or it's just Wisconsin's the only team that can even get somewhat of a handle on, and they haven't really played anyone besides Nebraska. So even Wisconsin, I'm not sure whether they're really for real or not. I mean, and by really for real, I mean one of those top six or seven teams in the country. But they're clearly the best team in the Big Ten. But it's just a crazy year.
It's going to be interesting. I think, you know, it's going to be interesting, especially if there's any carnage at the top. You know, you could be in a situation where you're arguing between Boise State and Wisconsin.
Yeah. As to whose undefeated resume
holds
Georgia, up.
And Georgia is looking more and more like the SEC East representative. So you could be sitting here on the final weekend. You'd be sitting here on the final weekend doing a lot of window dressing, and Boise's going to be saying, hey, look, though, our team we beat's playing for the SEC championship, and you know, who knows how that day will go out. But then Oklahoma and Oklahoma State don't appear to be ready to lose either, and they play each other on that final Saturday.
And I think it ends up killing Boise State that TCU is just not good this year.
No. They did win last night against San Diego State, but it's definitely not going to be the top 10 matchup that they needed.
I think that they needed that to be able to make a real argument for a title game appearance.
No, but they're, you know, the thing is, though, if there's any carnage, they're just going to be sitting there.
Yeah, but I mean, they've been sitting there before and get passed over. But I feel like a one-loss SEC team or someone will, I'd say even a one-loss Big 12 team would probably jump them.
One-loss Big 12 team, I don't know if I can, we've never seen that. One-loss SEC team is totally making the championship game. I mean, there's no argument there.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think we're vying for one. Well, we're vying for two spots, but we know one league is filling one of the spots for sure. So, I mean,
maybe just a one-loss Oklahoma
team. It's hard to say. It's just hard to say because we've never really seen that. I mean, like Ohio State's the only other non-SEC team to get in there with one loss, right? And look what kind of circumstances it took.
Yeah.
It just depends. But it is definitely a strong league, that's for sure.
Yeah.
We've never seen that. And you know, I think that Oregon is lurking with one loss too, you know. I think that they can't be discounted.
Yeah. I would agree.
They can't be discounted. So like they could, what I mean is like the Big 12 teams, when they finally do lose, they could fall behind Oregon.
Yeah.
So then you're dealing with the one-loss Pac-10 team who play Stanford late. So there's a lot going on.
Yeah,
I wasn't trying to just defend Boise. I was just trying to say that you have neither of those teams are good. Like Wisconsin is going to really have to put they're going to have to get their arguing shoes on.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
I guess that was my point.
They're going to have to defend the Big Ten this year, and that might be tough to defend.
Yeah, I mean, I just think you're gonna have those teams arguing a lot going into that last day, possibly, and you know, Wisconsin's gonna be playing maybe Michigan, and Boise's not gonna be playing anybody, but they might be bragging about Georgia in the SEC title game. Who the fuck knows?
Yeah, no, it's gonna be wild. I can't figure out how this is gonna play out unless Alabama and or LSU and Oklahoma just drive through to the end and make that decision easy. But we'll see. Thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. I am Ace Ambender, slowly taking over MGO blog one small podcast at a time. Thank you.